must constantly look at things in a different way.
The Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast was created by two physical therapists out of the desire to learn more about the different educational roles in physical therapy and healthcare, and how healthcare education works by talking with educational leaders and people with different perspectives within physical therapy and across interdisciplinary lines on how education can be improved to disrupt the status quo of healthcare education. This is our journey, and thanks for listening. Are you a third-year physical therapy student that excels on tests when you have study guides, checklists, and deadlines? With all of the information available about how to prepare for the NPTE, it's easy to get disorganized and not feel prepared going into the big day. NPTE Prep Success is an online course that provides PT students easy-to-use study guides and step-by-step guidance through the NPTE preparation. To learn more, visit kylericeprep.com. Thank you again all for your continued support, and now for the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, F. Scott Feel, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Stephanie Wyrock and Brandon Pone. I hope our listeners have their dancing shoes on today because we have two of the foremost experts on all things dance and rehab related in Dr. Jenna Cantor and Dr. Jessica Davis. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us today. For our audience who may not be familiar with you, would you mind telling us about your academic journeys and how they kind of led you to where you are today? Jessica, we'll start off with you.
Okay. So I have been practicing almost 20 years. And I basically got into the profession of physical therapy because when I was a kid, I was a dancer and got to the high school level, pre-professional area, and realized quickly that I probably should pursue academics versus dancing. At that point, I had no idea what I wanted to do professionally. And so my sister was a physician, and she said, why don't you go and volunteer in a hospital? And so I volunteered in a hospital as a candy striper back in the day and quickly found myself interested in physical therapy. So long story short, I came up with the idea back then that maybe it would be a neat idea to be a physical therapist for dancers. And this was, remember, like 20 years ago. So back then, they really didn't have a lot of dance medicine and science. So I went into the field kind of excited, hoping that there was going to be something about that, quickly to realize there wasn't much at that point. But the whole time I was in school, I realized that was something that I wanted to do. So I got out, graduated, moved out to California, worked in an amazing outpatient orthopedic facility that was, or had a residency program back then with USC. So I worked with many clinicians who were professors at USC, learned a lot about my manual therapy, quickly realized that I was really behind, actually. And so did the orthopedic type stuff, outpatient setting, nothing with dancers for quite a long time, moved back to Pittsburgh. And then what's funny is dancers started to find me because they quickly realized, hey, she is a dancer, she has an understanding. And remember, there wasn't a lot back then with the dance medicine stuff. So did my, OCS at that time, did my transitional doctorate. And then as I was a director of a practice, I kind of grew that practice to the point where they encouraged me to do the fellowship. So I did my fellowship with Evidence in Motion. And then I realized at that point in my life, it was really kind of a dream of mine to have my own practice. So started that about a year ago with the vision of working with dancers. And so my dancers have sort of followed me and I've been able to kind of build this practice around that. So that's kind of my background, basically. Trial by error.
I love that. And Jessica's been rocking it. She has been rocking it. I've been in touch with her, just been like, go girl. It's just amazing. She's been become a wonderful asset to the dance community in Pittsburgh, which is great.
Thanks, Jenna. Yeah. Right back at you.
So for me, my story is a little bit different. I was a professional musical theater performer for more than 15 years. I grew up as a ballerina, moved into musical theater because of just the wonderful plethora of injuries I got to experience. It kind of just pushed me in that direction. And then I remember there was a point in my career where I had an eating disorder and I was doing horribly financially, And I was just at my lowest point. And I was able to be independent financially and everything before that. And this is when I turned 30. And at that moment, that's also when my parents told me they were not happy about the direction of my life. And I still haven't met anyone who... I haven't heard anyone say to give an Oscar speech or a Tony Award speech saying, I made it and my parents didn't support me at first. I love them now, but they weren't there for me. And it's still possible because I'm not talking about financially. I'm talking about mentally. I didn't have that. So it affected me. And so I started to take classes for marketing because in the direction for business to go into marketing. And then I quickly learned that was dominated by men. And my parents were saying physical therapy. So I went, I observed, I was like, oh, they're obsessed about health. I was like, I can relate with that. And they're not sitting all the time. Okay. I've already found the love of my life. Nothing will ever, ever replace performing. However, this looks like I could get into it. I think I could get into this. I have a background in training, personal training and group fitness. I was like, all right, let's go for this. And I remember choosing my school specifically because I thought it'd be a safe zone to speak about the difficulty of transitioning. Because for performing arts, as much as to like my dentist and lawyer relatives, yeah, we're all Jewish, so that's what we all are, of course. so with, for them, that was like a big success. But actually in the community for performing artists, I was failing by going into school. So I kind of hid it when I first started. I remember getting, there was one casting director who knew I was in school and I had to turn him down some gigs, but there were some others where I was like, oh, I'm just not free right now. I just hid it, which is so funny to, I think, a lot of people, because you're like, what? You're getting your doctorate in physical therapy. That's incredible. But for me, that was a big part of my journey. And then while I was in school, I had a 180 degree change where I remember coming in and classmates were talking about volunteering and APTA. And I went, oh, that stuff sounds so dumb. And if anybody knows me now, I'm like so pro APTA. I'm so pro making a difference. And I've even created an organization that is all volunteer. So yeah, I definitely had a good change. And I, though performing arts is still the love of my life, I have found a way to combine both, which I support what Jess said in some of her, our little special off the air step questions that F. Scott was asking. In regards to just follow your passion, just do it right away if you want to. Because I think if I had to delay it, I'd be so miserable right now for me just jumping right in and just living the life, combining both performing arts with all my friends in musical theater with PT is where it's at.
Wow. I think just hearing the level, you know, of transformation that you both had gone through with those stories is really, really quite remarkable. And, you know, I'm just blown away by how awesome those stories were. And, you know, I realized that, you know, the topic today is kind of focusing more on rehabilitation with dancers. And I personally have not treated any people within that population, frankly. And, you know, just to kind of give a little bit of background here on that, because I'm curious from you both kind of working in that and kind of getting that, having that experience, what are some of the most common and prevalent injuries or conditions that are commonly seen in this population?
So when it comes to the dance medicine currently, most of the research right now is on ballerinas, basically, because yep, that's just where it's been. So you have to take that with a grain of salt, because dance is, of course, a variety of, you know, movements, and depending on what they're doing, they're going to have different injuries. Ballet specifically has been studied, and when you look at that, the number one most injured region happens to be the foot and ankle. It's like 57%, followed by the spine, then the hip, then the knee, and then the upper extremity. But again, you've got to take that with a grain of salt, because it depends on the choreography. It depends on what the dancer's doing, because if they're more of a modern dancer or Irish dancer or whatever, it's going, or even a break dancer, it's going to be very different versus, you know, ballet, classical ballet. That's changing over time, but most of these injuries, about 65%, is, now this is regarding, again, the dance specific, like ballet specific, is due to repetitive strain. And about 35% is because of trauma. So again, that's a pretty high prevalence because of repetition. So we'll get into that later, but that's something to like kind of keep in mind when it comes to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely speak from experience. I've experienced a lateral ankle sprains. I actually just recently strained my hamstring when I did a drop split and spam a lot every show. So I can definitely attest from personal experience as I combine my life as a performer and physical therapist. For me, I work with musical theater performers. So this is bouncing off, of course, what Jessica said. She has a benefit where she's working with the ballerinas. So most of the literature feeds into who she treats. For musical theater, it's just not there. I literally have to keep track of all research on every single dance style. I was just looking, I was talking to Jess you the other day. I was skipping over these two studies. One was on Irish dance and one was on country line dancing. I stopped while I was in the subway and I went, wait a second, I need to read these. I'm like, Footloose has country line dancing. And then once there's there was a Broadway show that was all Irish dancing. So for me, I have to just take everything and keep on top of all of it, even though there is very little. And it gets really, really specific with Broadway shows or specific choreography, depending on the show, because with ballet, there's a set language, a set steps that are just repeated and different kind of combination. You can get into contemporary, so it'll change it up a little, but it's pretty much the same foundation. When it's musical theater, it really depends on the choreography. So I have to take it patient by patient and keep on top of the literature, the very little and poor evidence. Most of it is cross-sectional studies, especially the ones I've been reading recently. They're all surveys or just getting, you know, just some measurements in one day. Because we have to watch and be careful about those ethics, because there are still things we know. We're pretty secure that lateral ankle sprains are you know, a big thing amongst dancers, but we can't, knowing that limits a lot of the research we would want to do if we were going to go into, say, a randomized control trial and so on. So I don't know how possible it is going to be long term to get the evidence that we need, but we do. So hopefully, right, Jess? Fingers crossed.
I would say, yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think it's an exciting time because, I mean, you just, the more and more I look, there's more literature. And I'm telling you, like 20 years ago, there was nothing. So this is exciting. And I think it's just going to continue to grow. And it's just, there's so much unknown at this point.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, ladies, I know this kind of depends on a bunch of different avenues for consideration, but generally speaking, how are a lot of these conditions that you're seeing being identified and treated with rehab?
So first of all, identified and treated with rehabilitation. Well, these dancers, they're performing artists, are very aware of their bodies, especially the ages that I'm working with. I'm not working with the adolescent. I'm working with, you know, 25 and up, essentially, because that's where they are usually in age when they are professional in musical theater. So you really, 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 I mean, we always say this as practitioners, but you really got to listen to these people and trust them. They know their bodies. And of course, we do all the obvious things with observation and stuff, but you have to listen to them. You need to observe them, and then you need to get extremely specific on what they are doing in their current show. Well, I'm speaking musical theater wise now, but that's a very big deal. And especially if they are on a tour or tour, however you pronounce it. My husband makes fun of the fact that I say tour, but I say tour. But if they're on tour, they're also on a bus for a long period of time, especially if it's non-union. So their bodies are kind of crammed up. So it's, you have to think about what their lifestyle is and take all of that into account, because most of them are going to be doing their homework that you give them. I can't say all, but most of them. And then you also need to take time to really note any of their past injuries for any physical adjustments that they have made. So for instance, I was working on a musical theater artist a few weeks ago, and he, for some reason, he was having this hip pain one side, and I looked at him standing. I did the usual observation, and I noticed he was favoring, leaning on one side. And then he ends up revealing to me, because he'd forgotten that happens in part of his history, that he did actually experience a knee injury on the other side, which is why he's probably leaning over. And so we just did a couple fixes, you know, in that session, immobilizing all that stuff and exercises, and he was able to, the pain went away in that moment. I'm not saying it's forever, but it was because with a performer, let me go back, as performers in musical theater, because they're doing these shows, they're doing the same thing over and over again, it's going to be enhanced. Their issue is going to be enhanced even more so, because even since he's standing on that one leg, so let's say it's the left leg, a little bit more, that means everything he's doing throughout the show is he's putting more on that leg. So if he's bending down and essentially squatting and throwing a costume off stage, you know, over and over again at like two shows a day, that's going to become more of a problem for him compared to the average person who's not doing that kind of repetitive activity.
Yeah, Jenna, I think you bring up a really huge point here, which is, you know, again, that repetition. So dancers in general, you know, I agree 100%, you know, in your population, I mean, there's so much pressure that this is their life, this is their livelihood, it's their identity. And so they come to you kind of reluctantly, or at least what I find is they come reluctantly. They don't want to see us. They would rather obviously not be injured, and they don't want to admit that they're injured, because, you know, dancers are trained at a young age. Pain is something that we deal with, and you deal with it gracefully, and it's kind of almost, you know, tough it out type thing. So for a dancer, sometimes it can get like confusing to know, okay, when is pain something that I need to pay attention to, or is this something that I can work through? And, you know, my population, what I'm dealing with is not the professional. I have a few professional dancers that come to me, which is great. But a lot of them are the adolescent type dancer. And for me, it's kind of educating early on, or hoping to educate them that, hey, listen, this is when your body's telling you something's wrong. And if you can identify it early, we can fix this, because dancers are, you know, very, very excellent at kind of finding adaptive type patterns of movement to compensate for something. And then that'll get them by short term, but then long term, they develop these maladaptive behaviors that end up becoming very complicated. As we know with chronic pain patients, you know, it becomes very complicated to figure out exactly what's going on. And they're so good at hiding it. But, you know, again, I think that you bring up such a good point about the repetition, because you've got to understand what a dancer is doing in that given moment. You know, I can think of, you know, I had a dancer that told me, well, my choreography called for me to do a single leg squat down to the ground. And I held that for one full minute. And then luckily my partner came and picked me up off stage, because I couldn't physically move my legs anymore. And I think, yeah, that's a lot of, no wonder your quad on the left is significantly stronger than your right. And so we need to problem solve what's going on here.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah.
I think that's so interesting. So, I mean, especially gathering just how much is all involved, and how much really gathering a full assessment of kind of what that dancer is doing, what kind of dance, what their requirements are, what kind of repetitive movements they go through, what are their thoughts and the movement pattern specifically. I think that's really good to consider, because frankly, I mean, I haven't dealt with dancers before, but that seems to make a lot of sense. And, you know, as with running, of course, we're learning that perhaps the type of shoe may not be as important compared to dosage of activity when it comes to reducing our risk of injury with running. But, you know, I'm curious, based on what's known when it comes to dancers, I know this might be more for ballerinas, we might know a little bit more based on what you had said earlier, but is this same concept, like in terms of with the shoes with running, is this similar or different when it comes to shoe wear for dancers? And what shoe considerations should be taken into account, if any, when managing dancers?
So it's complicated, right? So as with running, right, we're learning that with dancing, again, it is a repetition type thing. So it's, you know, it's not the number of dancing hours that a dancer is dancing, but are their bodies adequately prepared for those hours of dance, right? But shoe wear is something that's very elusive here. So there was a really nice systematic review done in 2011 by Fong, and they looked at the effects of footwear on dancers. And basically they determined, you know, bottom line, there's no shoe wear out there aside from the jazz sneaker that's preventative in nature or a good type of shoe to utilize in dancing. So bottom line, toe shoes are terrible, but it's a fact of life, you know. And I can think personally, when I was a kid, I had a stress fracture in my foot, and my doctor and my physical therapist looked at me and they said, well, just don't dance on point. And I looked at them and I thought, you know what, I have a audition coming up. And so, yeah, you can forget that. I'm going to wear my toe shoes and I'm going to audition, because that's just what we have to do. And then there really isn't a lot of protective type of footwear out there. And, you know, things that you have to consider with shoe wear, you need to know what type of shoes your dancer is using in their choreography. And also, when you look at them and they come to you with a particular complaint, and you need to find out, is it related to that type of shoes? Because they may have, you know, a 7-inch heel in one aspect of their dance, but then they're in a jazz sneaker and then they're in a toe shoe. And you need to know what type of shoe is causing that injury, if there is any. And then have them bring that shoe in, look at it while they're doing the movement at hand, and figure out what type of impairments or strength issues or something that you can do to correct that. Because we can't necessarily correct the shoe. There are certain things, like within toe shoes, if we can work on, is the dancer tying the ribbons too tightly? Are they not fitted properly in the right type of shank of shoe? Is it too strong? Is it too soft? What kind of floor is the dancer dancing on? All sorts of things that you can try to change. But bottom line, the shoe wear for dancers isn't adequate. But what they've found is, beside that, the other issue at hand is that dancers aren't adequately prepared for what they're doing. It's not the number of hours. Again, it's, are they trained physically to handle those number of hours?
Yeah, well said, Jenna. Jess. Yeah. Well said. Yeah, and definitely bouncing off that, of course, I really want to get into very specifically what shoe considerations should be taken into account. So if you're wearing anything like heels or point shoes, anything that's going to be getting to point your toe, essentially, all the time, so that means the back of your leg is going to be, those muscles are always going to be tight, and the front is going to be weak. Now, if you are doing a tap dancer, you may be wearing a small heel. However, you're actually going to be lifting the front of your toes more often. So you actually have the opposite problem, where the anterior portion of the leg is overused and the posterior is not. Now, with both of these, there's going to be an imbalance overall in the horizontal plane. And that's where that ankle instability and that rolling of the ankle really comes into play. So when Jessica's talking about having that type of preparedness, it really has to do with that proper training. So the foot, any uneven that you could be getting from that footwear, that shoe wear, could be made up for an exercise outside. And then, of course, if you are wearing these heels, don't wear heels all the time outside of your dance practice. Otherwise, you're not giving the back of your legs a break, ever. And also, I read an article, cross-sectional, on line dancing, and they were talking about footwear. And so they were seeing correlations. We don't know cause with a cross-sectional, but they were just talking about friction. Friction is also another thing to consider. I actually had to wear a boot in a recent show where I had to turn, and they ended up having to put tape on the bottom of my shoe in order to be able to turn, because it kept getting stuck. Now, that can definitely add torque on the knee and also go basically up the leg, who knows, you know, wherever it's going to really end up taking it. If I start suddenly get stopped, you know, which part of my body is going to be like, and cause a jerking, and that can really be cause an issue over time, especially if you're just pushing over and over again. So I definitely say that these shoes need to, you know, definitely be taken into consideration for sure, just like Jess was saying, and it definitely needs to be addressed. Full picture.
Speaking of full picture here, ladies, I'm starting to get a real clear picture of the dancer as an athlete. And you know, Jenny, you brought up a really interesting point earlier, with eating disorders and certain things that should be considered when dealing with dancers. But is there anything in particular that you guys can think of that should be examined subjectively and objectively, specifically for the dance population, that may not be considered for other patient populations?
So, of course, aside from the usual questions that you would ask about dance injuries, I would suggest that they would ask, you would ask, what is their dance style? You know, because they could say modern, but are they Horton? Are they Graham? Are assessing their technique. You can sit there and know they're a dancer, but how good, how strong is their technique? If you can get any video of them in their class, that would be a great, great thing to know, especially ballet. If we're looking at Jess's cohort of people that she works with, there's a different dance styles as well. I remember I had a Russian teacher that would teach me to tuck my pelvis, so posteriorly tilt my pelvis, and then developé my leg a la Saccone, which would just cause major hip flexor problems, overuse, and I had to definitely get a lot of therapy to overcome that. You need to know, as we've stated before, what their current choreography is. Are they doing more on a particular side? So they could be in a show and be doing a turn up to the right only, never to the left, or kicking one leg more, or even holding a pose for a long time. For instance, in the musical Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, in the opening of the second act, the narrator's out there singing, and then the rest of the ensemble is sitting there holding a pose. The pose will be different, you know, depending on the production but itself, but they're holding a pose for 5 to 10 minutes. So whatever is being held, that right there is going to cause, you know, a major difference in their rehabilitation. So I would say, though I'm leaning more on the subjective side, it's also objective, because you are taking exactly what they are doing and incorporating into your practice to help them rehabilitate.
And I mean, going along with that, Jenna, I would say, you know, in general, if you're not used to working with the dance population, when you have your first dancer, what you're going to find physically that may be foreign to you as a clinician is, you know, the amount of mobility you're going to find in general. So when you're trying to tease out a particular issue, like for example, let's say they have low back pain and you're trying to clear the hip as a potential generator of pain in the low back. You need to take that dancer to the true end range of motion that they have available. And it can be uncomfortable if you're not used to it. And you've got to get to, you know, not just where you feel their end feel is, you've got to get that overpressure application to make sure you're really, really clearing it. So expect that in general, they're going to be hyperflexible. However, some dancers are not. And if they aren't, they're going to be achieving that somewhere else, which is typically the lumbar spine or something like that. You're going to find that they're going to compensate, because to make it in their craft, they have to have it somewhere. But in general, dancers, surprisingly, as much as they are athletes, are unfortunately, and this is a whole different topic, but they're not trained as athletes. There's not a lot of encouragement to do outside cross training. That's changing, as the research is showing that that's very, you know, it, like, has a major impact on injury prevention, etc. But they are very poor in their motor control and their abdominal strength. And it's surprising you're going to find, and this is again in the ballet world, they're going to lack that quadriceps control, which is no surprise, because dancers, ballet dancers specifically, work in a turned out position and they're discouraged from using their quads. So different things that you may not see in a traditional athlete, expect that they're going to have those type of things, and know that your rehab has to be very specific to prepare that dancer for what they need to do, which is, when you're working with them, you need to train them in full range of motion. Your exercises need to be creative, to be dance specific, but also working in planes of movement that they're not doing, so that they're properly cross-trained. So that's kind of what I would say.
I really appreciate what you guys have been saying about how dancers get their little compensate. I was a dancer for many, many years, and I have anteverted hips. So you can about imagine what types of compensations I made to try to have really good turnout. My knee. Yeah. So I totally understand what you're saying with that. You know, I know you mentioned previously some of the things that the evidence says about prevention, but is there anything else that you guys maybe didn't mention What do we know about prevention when it comes to reducing the risk of dancing-related injuries that you maybe haven't mentioned yet?
So if you look at least, and again, remind you that most of the research out there that I'm referencing is in ballet, but most of the injuries that we see, as I mentioned earlier, are repetitive overuse. But if you look at what leads to each one of those, it is the one that comes out consistently is forced turnout. So you mentioned that you had antroverted hips. So you had to find some type of compensatory region or way to achieve that full turnout. So when we're talking about turnout, it's that perfect 180 that a dancer wants to achieve. And, you know, most anatomy of the hips, we don't have that. So it's got to come a little bit from the knees and the feet. And if you don't have that anatomically, a lot of dancers will force that. And if they're not caught at a young age and educated in proper turnout training programs, then they're going to develop like improper issues that will lead to a multitude of problems, whether that's foot and ankle, knee, low back. When you're talking about shoulder and cervical spine, that's not so related. But when the lower extremity is considered, most of those injuries are pertaining to that total turnout compensatory type strategies. So that's something. And then the other thing, again, is that lack of motor control. A lot of dancers, surprisingly, because you think about what they do on any given day, you would think that they would be very good at that. But they do, unfortunately, lack that. So part of the training with them is identifying that they may lack that and kind of recruiting those proper muscles to engage when you're working with them.
Also, specifically for musical theater, we're just lacking in that niche. And with musical theater, it's just so many different dance styles. So it just really, as I said before, it depends on the show. We do know from the more dominated ballet research studies that it starts, the injuries are mostly down at the foot and ankle. And then basically as you go up the body, it decreases. But as for right now, there's not a lot of good evidence for prevention. And most of it is still, we stem it from the cause, what we think may cause it, and bounce off that to come up with how we're going to prevent those injuries.
I love it. And, you know, one thing that we haven't really talked heavily in yet, and I know that you guys had mentioned a lot of the other avenues kind of regarding what are some of the reasons that an injury can be caused or some things that can perhaps influence that. But one thing we haven't really talked about quite as much yet in much detail is kind of the elements of nutrition and lifestyle factors. And that's kind of something I'd like to kind of pick your guys' brains about in terms of kind of what are the common things in that departments that you see and kind of what are the best ways that you kind of have noticed to kind of help overcome those difficulties to help really that athlete perform the best that they can.
Ooh, that's hard. Because if I'm just going to talk about eating disorders, people who are in the middle of an eating disorder and just are in denial, you don't know where they're at mentally to have that conversation. So if you're working with a dancer or a musical theater performer who is underweight, that could be a really sensitive topic that could actually lead them to binging and purging more or eating less, because that's how they handle it. So I don't have a solution for that, because I'm just going to be addressing the nutrition aspect, because that can be a very, very tough one. As for nutrition, everything, we can give some tips here and there, but I think it's important as physical therapist practitioners for us to have people that we trust who specialize in nutrition in our back pockets, so we can forward them to people to help them go in the right direction. But this has to be handled very, very carefully, because it could lead to a downward spiral.
Sure. And Jenna, not even just the nutrition, but I would say you got to be looking at things like sleep, you know, and schedule, because a lot of these shows are several times a week and they're at night most of the time. So these people are often, you know, up late and then up early again to start rehearsing or whatever. So lifestyle, I'm sure, is a big deal as well.
I would say it depends on the age. If they're in their 20s, they're going to be doing the dumb stuff that we did in our 20s. But when they get into their 30s, you'll notice, even in cast alone, the 30-year-old people will be like, I'm going to go in my PJs and fall asleep now, you know, and wake up at 7 a.m. when no one's awake. You know, so it really, I would definitely agree in the younger group of people, that is definitely a thing that could, they could get that advice, but I don't know if they would actually be ready to apply it yet mentally.
I would say, you know, also too, you know, unfortunately, a lot of dancers live below the poverty line. So they may not have access to good health coverage. And then on top of dancing, whenever they can dance, whenever they're employed, they're having outside jobs. So they're doing all sorts of, you know, whatever job that they can find. So you have to think about that too, in terms of how that may be playing a role in their injury, because they, yes, they may be performing at night, but then during the day, they happen to be doing X, Y, and Z with their bodies, like in some other realm, right? With a, whatever job it is. So, you know, those hours that they're performing like that, I like to use that acute chronic workload ratio, that's been used with, other kind of, athletes, which is, you know, figuring out what they're doing in 1 week's time for that acute workload and then dividing it by on average what they're doing for that 4 weeks and kind of figure out what are they doing? Is their body adequately prepared for what they're doing now? And then unfortunately, a lot of dancers, again, to maintain weight, come up with things like smoking and just, again, other, aside from eating disorders, they're coming up with other strategies to maintain their weight. And it's, you know, a conversation that maybe we address, but we also recognize that it really is a multidisciplinary approach, because we need to have those good people on our staff, or people that we know that, that the dancer can also trust, that's got their back, that we can refer this quickly and address it. Because as Jenna said, if you say the wrong thing, they're going to come back and be pretty aggressive the other way, because it is, you know, there's so much multifactorial with when it comes to that.
Access to healthcare is one of the largest issues facing both providers and patients, as millions of people worldwide lack timely and affordable access to healthcare. Anywhere Healthcare, a telehealth platform, is a simple, low-cost option for providers and patients that eliminates the barriers to access to all kinds of healthcare. To find out more, check out anywhere.healthcare, which is available in our show notes. And if you use the code HET in all caps when you email to sign up, you'll save 25% off the total cost.
Thank you for attending class today, and we hope that you learned something and gained value from the content.
If you'd like to schedule office hours with us, feel free to add us on Twitter at HET Podcast, on Instagram, HET Podcast, on Facebook, The Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast, and the homepage, healthcareeducationtransformationpodcast.com.
And for those of you following along in the syllabus, extra credit can be obtained by liking us, sharing us, and leaving a review.
Let's continue our journey up Mount Educational Success as lifelong learners.